Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, February 4th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Bunny Wilson will be joining us here in just a few minutes, Al. But let's first go ahead and get to the market reports, so she can bring us some great information that she always does. We have gold today up 420, up 420 on gold, 1265. Silver's up 9 cents today at 1746. Platinum is up 6 at 1242. And palladium is up 6 at 795. And the USDX today was stronger, 0.28. Everything was stronger today, 0.28. On the USDX, 93.97, except crude oil. They hammered crude oil. A little bit of gain yesterday, although somebody's making tons of money. Crude oil down, 3.95. 3.95 on crude oil, 49.10. And the paper markets today, you have the Dow up 6 points at 17,672. I don't know, it was kind of weird. It was up all day. The paper markets were up all day. And like the last 10 minutes of trade, they went down considerably. And it usually doesn't do that. You usually find them climbing back the last hour of trade. And, you know, they pretty much stay there, but not today. So tomorrow might be an interesting day. The NASDAQ was down 11 points at 47.16. The S&P was down 8 at 204.1. 10-year yields up 0.02 at 1.80%. And, no, that's about it, Al. The euro was 114 today, staying there off its low of 112. And, yes, Staples. I thought it was an interesting report or announcement that Staples was buying Home Depot. But I guess their stockholders didn't like it. It was down 11% today, so.
So maybe they're not buying Home Depot. Do you mean Staples stockholders didn't like it, or do you mean Home Depot's
stock? Well, Staples stock was down 11%.
Hmm.
So, interesting. So, Wendy Wilson.
Exactly right, from thepowerherbs.com. Hello, Wendy.
Melody. How are you doing?
Hey, Wendy. Hey.
Thank you
for joining us. Thank you for joining us today. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep.
Awesome.
What are we going to talk
about? We're going to talk about, Al, how we can improve our health when we breathe better. I'm learning from a new exercise routine called classical stretch that I don't breathe properly, and learning to stretch and breathe properly really enhances my other exercise workouts. So I wanted to share the health benefits of getting to breathe better, because we really don't think about it. It's kind of like autopilot breathing. And Benjamin Franklin, he would always open windows even in the middle of winter, and he would take these deep breaths of fresh air. He says that kept him healthy. So proper breathing improves not only our sleep and our wakeful hours, it also improves our immune system function. But we really don't think about breathing properly, helping all our organs to communicate better with each other and deliver more oxygen and nutrition to every cell. So exercise experts in yoga say that when you improve your breathing, it will assist your body-mind balance and help your unconscious and conscious mind work better in tandem. So breathing, they say, is really the universal energy, and our nervous system can't live without excellent breathing. So when we improve our breathing, we'll improve a number of physical systems that we have, including the nervous system. And we also have the power to change the way we breathe. It's a voluntary motion that we can improve on. So, and there's things that can sabotage our breathing, Al and Melody, usually chronic stress or emotional distress or an illness of some kind. Our body responds with an elevated heart rate. We may even perspire. Our muscles get tense, and our breathing becomes faster and shallower. So when this happens, our sympathetic nervous system can become overloaded and create more of an imbalance, and it could lead to things like inflammation or high blood pressure or even chronic muscle pain. So when we learn to breathe properly, we can counter a lot of this imbalance and encourage ourselves to relax. So we're going to take a breathing test. You ready?
Ready.
You're ready. Okay. So what we could do is what you want to do is you want to put one hand on your chest and one hand on your abdomen, and you want to take a breath. And which hand rises higher?
It's my probably stomach, my abdomen.
Oh, your abdomen. So you're an abdomen breather. Is that right? No.
Well, I'm still a breather one way or the other. I know whether I'm breathing well or not so well. It's still important to keep breathing. At the moment, it appears that my stomach is what it rises.
Okay.
What about the chest?
Well, typically, most people, the hand on the chest rises higher than the hand on the abdomen, and they are what are known as chest breathers. This is a shallow breathing. And it's not adequate, it's not enough oxygen to inflate the bottom portion of the lungs. It will inflate the top portion of the lungs in a closer to the head area, but they call this chest breathing. And anyway, it's just not adequate. You really want to get the abdomen engaged in your breathing as well. So health experts tell us that chest breathing is not efficient breathing. The lower lobes of the lungs have more blood flow to them. So if the chest does not expand to increase the volume of air into that area of the lungs, you have limited oxygen distribution to your blood system. And this hinders your circulation and the nutrient delivery and so forth. So the goal really is to become abdomen breathers to improve our health. So they say it's like brushing your teeth or riding a bike. Once you learn how to do it, you'll even do it while you're sleeping, becoming an abdomen breather. So what you want to do is, and when you do that, you'll also improve on a lot of stress, especially if you get stressed out. They say if you'll do this deep breathing, you'll remove the stress in less than 10 minutes from your body. So we're going to convert you, the listeners out there, from chest breathers to abdomen breathers. And it has a lot of physical and emotional benefits. So what it is you're becoming really a diaphragmic breather. You're engaging the whole diaphragm. And you're also engaging that muscle in the chest it's in the abdomen area. It's called the rectus abdominis. And that is the area where, most bodybuilders have their six-pack. So that's the area we're going to really activate when we breathe. And it forces, actually, the muscle, when you do that, the muscle forces downward, and it causes this negative pressure in the chest that forces the air in and out of the lungs. So it increases your blood flow to the chest and to the heart, and will stimulate more stamina to the body and the lymphatic system, which is your part of your immune system. So we can breathe with our abdomen. We'll reduce the risk of lung infections, and we'll be able to release more tension. So
why does it release? Why does it reduce the risk of lung infection?
Well, you're getting more blood flow and oxygen to the lungs, and blood brings healing. It takes out waste material and brings in nutrients. So
What I'm wondering about is this: the way you're explaining this is when you breathe with your abdomen, you are inflating the entire lung. It implies that if you don't breathe with your abdomen, you're only inflating part of the lungs, and that implies that some of the lungs are left essentially stagnant. And
well,
I'm wondering
if stagnation
contributes to disease.
Yes, they kind of get stiff. It's like a muscle, and when you don't have a full range of motion, you're going to have limitation. So if you're going to have limitation, then you do open yourself up to more risk of infection and disease. So let's start. Let's try this. So put one hand on your chest and one hand on your abdomen. All right. And the goal is you want the abdomen to rise higher than your chest, the hand on your chest. So you're going to pull air into the base of the lung. So you're going to also inhale through your nose, and you want to count to seven, but you don't want to exceed the count of seven. Then you want to slowly exhale through your mouth, counting to eight. And then while you do that, you contract the abdomen, the rectus abdominis muscle there, to release all the air from the lungs, and then relax. And this is going to extend your respirations, and you're more going to be completely exhaling. And you can repeat that pattern four times, so that means you'll be taking six breaths per minute. And your rate of exhalation is twice as long as the rate of inhalation. So that's the goal. And it is a respiratory system that the brain is connected to. So these breathing techniques really provide a powerful way to enhance your whole system. And that actually is from the authors of The Healing Power of Breath, Dr. Richard Brown and Dr. Patricia Gerberg. They say it's a portal, even though it's an involuntary issue, breathing. Most people just don't think about it, but it is voluntary. You can change the rate, the depth, the pattern, and all that. So you can relax in 10 minutes with deep breathing like this. Students can practice this technique before they take a big exam or play the big game. And it's excellent for a stress management tool. And according to the experts at WebMD.com, if you have difficulty grasping a new subject, they say this deep breathing can make it easier to learn new things. So stress can mess us up in a number of ways. So learning to breathe is going to enhance us, and it's going to de-stressify us. What do you think of that?
I think I'm not sure that stressify is a word, but I think I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Awesome. You're a little like our former president Bush, who made up his own words once more. I think that's maybe what. But other than that, yeah, I get this. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know, it makes good sense. And it's actually a simple kind of procedure. I mean, it's difficult to explain. You've got a number of things on your explanation. You got put a hand on the on the chest, one on the stomach, blah, blah, blah. It's just breathing.
Yeah, it is. And hopefully your stomach's not huge, and that way you can't tell.
That's one of the things. My stomach is already higher than my chest in its own way, so I don't know.
I was thinking of the other end also on the chest issue.
Oh yeah, like a Dolly Parton issue? Yeah, okay.
I hope you don't have that problem, Al.
No, I don't. It's one of those things that I think the man's problem is typically more with the stomach or abdomen than with the chest. And women, they have a different kind of problem, although men might not necessarily agree that that's a problem. But when it comes to breathing, maybe so.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's some herbs that help
this.
Too.
Let me ask you this. When we have two ways of breathing, abdominal breathing and chest breathing. That's what I'm understanding you to say. I don't doubt that at times I do chest breathing, but I suspect that when I do it is when I am not just in the sense of being stressed, but in a sense, for example, if I was running down a road.
Sure.
I'm going to guess that my chest breathing is kind of like the afterburner. Your primary means of breathing ideally is perhaps with your stomach, but if you're getting into a football game or a basketball game or you're running for your life, at that point in time, the chest breathing kicks in and adds to your breathing capacity. Is that true or is that a bad guess?
No, you're right. Actually, it's like the fight or flight response, and that way you get more blood flow and oxygen to the head area. So your chest breathing would be for more situations of need or exertion, as you're saying. So, yeah, but in most times you're not exerted like that. Most of the times you're more relaxed and you should be an abdominal breather. And there's a lot of people that have been able to use some herbs to help expand the volume of their chest capacity and get more oxygen into the deeper area of the lungs, especially if they have to decongest, you know, asthmatics, for instance, and also people with congestion. There's a herb called lobelia that dilates the diaphragm muscle and allows you to take a deeper breath, and it helps you get more power behind a cough so you can dislodge a lot of congestion if you have that, or to bring you, and it also relaxes the chest cavity muscle so asthmatics don't feel so tight. So lobelia is an excellent herb that you can pair with breathing exercises.
You know, for what it's worth, I moved to Utopia, Texas for a while a few years ago, and then outside the place where I was living, there was a 300-tall high hill, and I started walking up and down that hill every day, and initially, I could just feel that my lung capacity had shrunk so much from being involved in a sedentary occupation for years that I couldn't climb up that hill very effectively. But after I kept at it for a while, my lung capacity increased, right?
Yep.
It felt like my lungs were the size of grapefruit, practically. And over time, I got to where I was carrying 70, 80 pounds of weights up and down that 300-foot hill. I was in great shape. And, I mean, you do the exercise, and it will also expand the capacity of your lungs. And,
sure.
You know, makes you feel better.
Well, good for you, Al. That's good. Yeah, if anybody's interested in learning how to use lobelia to help them breathe as well as their exercises, we do have it. It's called Relaxation Formula, and it's at thepowerherbs.com if you want to check that out, or ask for our free product catalog by calling 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. All right?
All right, Wendy, we've actually got about another 30 seconds, according to my clock.
Oh,
anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we have the 15th anniversary catalog. We're getting a lot of good feedback on that. It has more information this time, so people can make more educated decisions. But they can download that catalog, too, off our website at thepowerherbs.com. Just click on books, newsletters, and free catalog to find it. And just give us a call if you need us to mail you a hard copy and get educated. It's empowering.
All right, Wendy, thanks very much. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663. Wendy Wilson. We'll talk to Wendy again next Wednesday. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Hey, I got a test for you, Al. Coordination
test. Put one hand on my head, the other on one counter.
Oh, Al, you're just no fun whatsoever.
I've been around for a while, Melody. You understand? You can't just catch my nose between two fingers, stick your thumb out there, and tell me, oh, I got your nose.
No. And
if I had a little more years on me, then you know, I don't fall for that anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, sometimes you can, but...
I can be fooled a lot, but it takes kind of a newer...
Well, that means you were thinking about that same thing. You were thinking about that same little test.
Yeah, I was.
I know.
Yeah, when Wendy was talking about putting your hand, you know, you're going to put your one hand here. And I thought, oh, this is going to be pat your hand up your belly. But
and
no,
chew gum.
Yeah, the gum and walk. If you can walk, pat your belly, rub your head, and chew gum at the same time, then you can be a radio talk show host.
And here we are.
Yep, here we are. What's next, Melody?
Well, we got a little something about the Greece.
A couple of things about Greece. Here's one of them, and we talked a little about this in the last few days. I was speculating that the reason the debt in Greece is so important, because Greece is, you know, I doubt that we have any states in this country that are smaller in terms of size and population than Greece. It's not that you wouldn't think that Greece has much economic significance, and yet people are all excited. Oh my gosh, Greece has to pay the bill. They got to pay the bill. They got to pay their bills. Why? And to me, the answer had to be because those bonds that Greece had issued as evidence of their debt were being used as collateral by some of the banks, perhaps the European Central Bank or other banks in Europe or who knows where. They were used as collateral. And then under fractional reserve banking, if they've got a $1 million bond from Greece, they're lending out, who knows, 10 million or more to the public. And if Greece closes down on that $1 million bond, said, gee, we can't pay, then they have to pull in the $10 million that was loaned under fractional reserve banking based on that $1 million Greek bond. And they don't want to pull that $10 million in. The significance is that while Greece allegedly owns somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 billion, they might have to pull in 10 times that much or more if the Greek debt was rendered void. That'd be like pulling $3 trillion and maybe a lot more than that out of the European economy. Well, here's something from the market ticker. And it's entitled, If True, Then. That's the title on it. It says, George Osborne has recently warned that the standoff between Greece and its international creditors could derail Britain's recovery, describing the deadlock as the biggest threat to the global economy. Now, once again, we are looking at little tiny Greece derailing Britain's economy, their recovery? How can that be? That just doesn't make sense. That's like, you know, it's a little bit for lack of the nail, the shoe was lost, for lack of the shoe, the horse was lost, for lack of the horse, the king, the battle was lost, the king was lost, so on. He goes on, and he says, the chancellor urged Greece and the rest of the Eurozone to act responsibly as the newly elected Greek government, seeks to reduce the country's debt pile and renegotiate the $240 billion bailout agreement. Right? And this article, again, is coming from the market ticker, and they write, think about that, folks. Greece is a tiny little nation. It has roughly $240 billion in GDP, a minuscule 0.4% of the world's economic output. So how does this little nation become the greatest threat to the world economic outlook? There's only one way this can possibly be true. The rest of the world, specifically the rest of the European Union, must have levered themselves at some obscene multiple, like 100 to 1 or more, such that if those bets go bad, they're unable to be covered and the creditor is not part of the European Union or the creditor's funds were sufficient or fictitious, excuse me. What they're just saying is pretty much what I was talking about a couple of days ago. And they just said, look, the only way Greek's debt is that significant is if it's been multiplied or leveraged under fractional reserve banking to where there's $234 billion, some sources say $315 billion, I'm just going to say $300 billion owed by Greece. If it's just 10 times, if it was leveraged by 10 times under fractional reserve banking, then there could be $3 trillion called in if the entire $300 billion Greek debt was canceled. And that's the big danger, and that's why everyone's screaming. And here's another article, and it's entitled, this is from Ms. Jedlock, and it's entitled, Smart Debt Engineering, Markets Giddy Over Greek Debt Proposal. The markets are giddy today over a plan to end debt standoff released yesterday by Greek Finance Minister Yanis Varoufakis. Varoufakis said the government would no longer call for headline write-off of Greek's €315 billion foreign debt. Right, I might have said dollars with my numbers before, but we're talking about euros. Varoufakis said would no longer call for headline. Now, in other words, the Syriza party, which won election on January 25th, that's 10 days ago, all right? They won election on the 25th based on its radical promise to end austerity, right, and thus not repay the Greek national debt. They're talking about repudiating half the Greek national debt. That's what they're talking about. Now, after less than 2 weeks in office, Syriza has apparently softened its stance and implicitly declared that it would not cancel half of the Greek debt and would instead implement a program of smart debt engineering. That's the term they're using. Smart debt engineering would allow Greece to pay to not pay its debts without having to admit that it's insolvent and bankrupt, as expressly admitted just last week by Greece's Minister of Finance, Yanni Varoufakis. Now, what I'm getting to is Greece, all they have to do is say, okay, we're going to, oh, yeah, you can count on us. We'll pay all of our debt. Well, as long as they say that, all of the correlative debt or instruments are deemed to be performing. They still have value. Unless Greece admits that, look, we're insolvent, we can't pay. And in fact, I saw Yanis Varoufakis back just in the last several days. He was on an interview where he admitted, look, what you got to understand is Greece is insolvent. This isn't an illiquidity problem. It's not a problem where they don't have enough money in their wallets. It's like going out for dinner with your friends and you say, oh, my gosh, I forgot my wallet. Bob, you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to pay for my dinner and I'll get the money back to you on Monday. Now, that would be an illiquidity problem. I don't have the cash in my pocket. Greece doesn't have the cash in its bank accounts. But it's not a bankruptcy problem. It's a completely different thing if you say, gee, Bob, I don't have any money because I'm bankrupt. I'm flat broke. But could you pay my bill? Could you pay for my dinner anyway? That's a bankruptcy problem, an insolvency problem. And what the Minister of Finance of Greece said, yeah, they're bankrupt. They can't pay it. They don't have it. And it's wrong to keep dragging them down the road, pretending they're going to pay when they can't ever. But smart debt engineering would allow Greece to not pay its debts without having to admit that it's insolvent and bankrupt, you know, as expressly admitted last week by the Greek Minister of Finance. This probably marks the single quickest repudiation by a political party of policy in world history. Less than 2 weeks ago, the radical Syriza party was determined that Greek austerity, they were going to end the austerity by canceling at least half of their debt. Today, that same party has become reasonable and will not cut half of its debt. I will bet you that the Greek people, I mean, my God, they just voted these people in 2 weeks ago. And now they're already, the new party is threatening to say, no, you still got to pay your debts. Or at least that's the appearance of this. The Greek people are probably getting ready to riot, march, throw a few Molotov cocktails, whatever, and throw Syriza out if Syriza doesn't change its course. What Greece wants is, go ahead, Melody.
I was going to say politicians, but it kind of makes you wonder what was the defining moment that made him change.
Somebody sat
them
down.
You betcha.
Somebody sat them down, and what has happened is.
Do you want to live?
Maybe.
Do you want to live?
It may be that they threatened their lives. It may be that they've. How would you like to retire to a mansion in on the Mediterranean coast of France? Would you like to have a mansion down there? What do you want? It may be they sat him down and explained how real world economics works. And it may be that Tsipras, the new Greek prime minister, and Varoufakis, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, the new Greek minister of finance, all of a sudden they realized, oh my gosh, it's not so simple that we can just cancel the debt. And if we do, we're going to cut everybody's throat, including our own. Somebody may have given them a real lesson in economics, and they said, oh my gosh,
or
can't cancel the debt.
True. Or maybe it was just a political party that said what they needed to say in order to get elected.
I don't think that's what happened. I don't think they would have dared. I mean, this thing is so crazy and potentially violent. You'd have to be nutty to go in there and say, well, we won the election. We'll probably be hanged in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But we did win the election. You know, I don't think so. I think they were sincere. They may have been ignorant. Or now they're educated, or now they're in danger. Hard to say, but they've had an attitude adjustment in Greece. You know, you remember that song, Melody? You ever hear it? You needed an added guy singing about it. He got an attitude
adjustment.
busted his head with a club and the rest of that sort of thing and got an attitude adjustment. Well, Greece apparently got an attitude adjustment. It says here in the article, Greece wants smart debt engineering. That's the term they're using. That would avoid the need to use a term such as debt haircut. All right? They don't want to talk about giving people a haircut because that's politically unacceptable in Germany and other creditor countries, because it sounds to taxpayers like an outright loss, which is exactly what we're talking about, but we're going to put another name on it. It's another illustration of the situation with Janet Yellen, where she used the word
patient.
Exactly. And the market jumped, all right, to record highs. She said, and my God, we're living in a world where the markets are determined by the use of words. Right? All by itself, if somebody says, if you say a taboo word, oh my gosh, the world may come to an end. If you say a great word, a magical word, the markets may jump. You can't run an economy based on just words. As important as public confidence may be, nevertheless, the economy cannot depend on just words, because sooner or later somebody is going to say something stupid, and if they do, then the whole thing may collapse. But Greece doesn't, they want to call it smart debt engineering, but not a haircut, okay, because that's politically unacceptable. You see, it's not an outright loss. That's what they're trying to avoid. They don't want Germans to understand that they're getting beat out of their money completely. It's not an outright loss unless the governments of Greece and Germany publicly admit that it's an outright loss. So long as we pretend that Greece, which will never be able to actually repay its current national debt, so long as we pretend that Greece is still going to repay someday somehow, then the economic system can hold together. But if we admit the truth, as has already been publicly admitted by the Syriza party, Venice Varoufakis, he admitted this just in the last week, that Greece is insolvent. It was his term, insolvent, meaning bankrupt and permanently unable to pay its current debts. If we admit that truth, the whole house of economic cards might collapse, certainly for Greece, probably for the European Union, and maybe even for the United States. Little Greece, 0.4% of the global population, if they won't pay their bills, if they publicly come out and say, that's it, forget it, we're not paying, the whole house of cards can come down, which tells you something about how fragile the current economy is. If little Greece can collapse the debt. What about North Dakota? What if debts up in North Dakota get so far out of line that it can't be paid? And Canada and Mexico and every other country. I mean, where's a smaller country than Greece? And yet, if Greece doesn't pay its debts, the whole thing might go down. Varoufakis, that was the minister of finance in Greece. Varoufakis seeks a menu of debt swaps to ease the burden, including two new types of bonds. New and improved bonds, ladies. That's the solution. The first type of bond is indexed to nominal economic growth, and it would replace European rescue loans. Now, the article I'm reading from doesn't explain what they mean by indexed to nominal economic growth, but what I think it means is that if the Greek economy recovers, starts to grow, starts to generate a little of cash, a little extra cash, some sort of payment would be made on the first kind of bond. That's if it would be indexed to growth in the Greek economy. However, so long as the Greek economy didn't grow, little or no payment would be made. The second type of bond, which Varoufakis termed perpetual bonds, would replace European Central Bank-owned Greek bonds. Okay? The central banks are holding Greek bonds, and the Greeks are obligated to pay those bonds over the course of the next 5 years, 10 years, however long. And what they want to do is they're going to swap out the bonds where the Greeks are obligated to pay in the next 10 years. And they're going to swap those for perpetual bonds where the Greeks would never be obligated to repay. You'd have a bond, yeah, but the Greeks would never have to repay it. They'd be called perpetual bonds because they'd be meant to be never, ever repaid. these perpetual bonds would correspond to the old joke by debtors who would tell you, I'd rather owe it to you than cheat you out of it. You understand? The Greeks aren't going to cheat you out of the debt. They're going to give you a perpetual bond, and it'll be perpetual because you never have to pay the debt. But you're not going to be cheated. Oh, what else? Purchased by the European Central Banks. These perpetual bonds. Where are we already? Oh, I'm well into the commercial time. Come back and I'll finish this. There's a couple last remarks that are just adding to this eternal comedy. You know, we had Greece. I think they started where we first saw those two masks, one for comedy, one for tragedy in the theater. We're good. We can break out the masks. We are going to need them in Greece again. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarson. Back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Melody will have a special for you in a couple of moments. I'm going to finish what I was talking about with Greece. And they're issuing two kinds of bonds. The first kind, they don't have to pay any money on unless the Greek economy recovers, and then they pay a little bit, right? The second kind are perpetual bonds, which they will not have to ever pay any money on. And these perpetual bonds will be purchased by the European Central Bank, you see. And these perpetual bonds will thus probably correspond to the toxic assets. That was the term that was used when the Federal Reserve purchased a bunch of worthless securities from insolvent banks, 2008 to 2009, when the U.S. was near financial collapse. Of course, the Greeks won't use the term toxic assets to describe their bonds because, having heard that term in the U.S. 5 or 6 years ago, people would realize that perpetual bonds means toxic assets, which means whoever is issuing the new Greek bonds is bankrupt. and the toxic assets / perpetual bonds are worthless. If the people truly understood that the Greek government is bankrupt, they'd lose confidence in the Greek and even European Union financial systems. Without public confidence, those fiat monetary systems could collapse. And the final analysis whether the Greek bonds have any real value is irrelevant. What counts is that the world thinks that the Greeks will someday somehow repay their debts, and therefore the perpetual Greek bonds will someday have some value. The Greek and European Union monetary systems are based on the lie that Greece will somehow repay its debts. It can't, won't, isn't going to happen. How long can that lie be sustained? How long can the truth be suppressed? Sooner or later, people are going to say, you know what, I don't think the Greeks can pay their debts. I think this is all just a fast shuffle. And when that happens, those debts are going to be seen as worthless. And then under fractional reserve banking, the loans that are based on those debts, and they're multiples, my guesstimate, who knows, 10 times. The article we read from earlier suggested it might be leveraged as much as 100 times. Greeks are in debt for $300 billion. It might be 100 times, not just 10 times, $3 trillion. It might be $30 trillion that they're in debt, or that $30 trillion in loans that are based on Greek bonds. And those loans, in theory, have to be called in if the Greek bonds are shown to be worthless. And this is why they needed to maintain the illusion of toxic assets. They said, oh, this, here in the United States, they would buy our toxic assets. And in doing so, they maintained the illusion that the loans under fractional reserve banking that had been made based on those toxic assets were still okay. And they're doing the same thing in Greece right now. And you just have to wonder, how long can this game be sustained? And what happens when even a little country like Greece says, hey, look, guys, we're bankrupt, we can't pay? What happens then? Melody, what's your special for today?
Well, we're running just a little one here, but it's a power. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, okay. I can hear you now, but I just
pay attention.
No, that was but I will try.
Anyway, let's go on. Let's go on with this special. Uh-huh. We've got a small special, but it's a powerful special, and certainly it's great for both investments in gold and silver. And it is both American Eagles. We have a 1/10 of an ounce gold eagle, along with 20 silver eagles, 1 ounce silver eagles, 22 a tube. And of course, they would be dated 2015. And that total package is $520. And that includes all your shipping costs. So it's a nice little package for those of you who are looking for small fractional pieces. The 1/10 ounce is a great little coin to own. It's far superior than the chips and the grams and the little bars that have become a novelty that has been pushed. And certainly most people would recognize and accept a coin minted by a government, the U.S. government, over that type of a novelty of the bars, grams. So it's a great little package. Of course, everyone is familiar with the 1 ounce silver eagle. And you get 22 a tube. This includes all your shipping costs for $520. So you can give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And it's interesting because the aftermarket in gold and silver continue to rise. We have gold right now at $1,271, up almost $10. So it's silver's pretty much the same. You see a little bit of increase in platinum and palladium, but gold is up $990, so at $1,271.
Since the market closed?
Since I gave the numbers.
Oh, since you gave the numbers. Okay.
Yeah, the gold market actually closes earlier in the day, but I use the New York spot price because most of my clients do. So it's a little easier for them to understand when you're describing the spot price and so forth. So gold continues to trade in the aftermarket. These are aftermarket numbers, and they do continue to rise. So good sign for gold tomorrow. And we were going to talk a little bit about Jordan.
No, ISIS.
ISIS and Jordan, and Jordan's king vows a relentless war on the Islamic State's own ground. And of course, that is tying in on the video that was published by this group showing a captured Jordanian Air Force pilot being burned alive in a cage. I mean, and it's, you know, Al, it kind of just makes you, I mean, the thought process is just, you had Jordan, they hung two Iraqi jihadists. One was a woman on Wednesday, and they vowed to intensify this military action against the Islamic State. Stated in a television comment, the king was quoted as saying, "We are waging this war to protect our faith, our values, and human principles, and our war for their sake will be relentless and will hit them in their own ground." And he also stated that he had promised an earth-shaking response to the killing of its pilot that was captured after his F-16 had crashed. So this Islamic State has certainly have gotten...
they've lost their minds.
They have. Well,
I mean, this is so barbaric and so horrific. You know, you die, you die. In the end, I don't know necessarily that it makes a lot of difference how you die, but this is certainly a terrible way to go, being burned alive in a cage. This is the sort of thing, who could have authorized this? They are this may be just some lunatic at the lower level of the Islamic State military that just did this, and because he's just a dummy. But if this is authorized by the top leadership, these people have discredited themselves so badly that Jordan is claiming they're going to attack ISIS in part to save the Islamic faith. They understand that people looking at this right now are saying, "My God, how can you call yourself the religion of peace if you're willing to burn a man alive?" There's no one in the world who can sit back and say, "Well, I'm Muslim and I'm proud that we burned this Jordanian in a cage, burned him alive." No Muslim can make that statement and also expect the world to sit back and say, "Well, boy, oh boy, I sure want to grow up to be a Muslim." This is the religion of peace. This is an astonishing atrocity committed by Muslims against Muslims. Whole thing is beyond comprehension, but it's going to ignite some sort of serious dichotomy. I mean, there's already a dichotomy between the two fundamental faiths, two fundamental branches of the Muslim faith, one of which is Shia, and what's the other one? I can't think of the term. I can't think of the proper term, but that dichotomy already exists, and it's broken out in warfare over the centuries between the two major branches of the Muslim faith, and then they play nice for maybe another century or two, and then they go into big wars. This stupid, mindless, horrific, brutal, bestial burning of a man in a cage, it is going to inspire some sort of fragmentation within the world Muslim community that just might be spectacular. We'll watch and see. And Jordan says there's going to be an earth-shaking consequence. Well, you can say it's earth-shaking because it's, you know, it's going to be big. It's going to be something important. I don't know that Jordan has any nuclear weapons. I don't suppose that it does, to tell you the truth. But when they talk about earth-shaking, they could be talking about some sort of horrific bombing. And that shakes the earth. Now, I'm not sure that's what he meant. Did he say earth-shaking as a metaphor? Or was he saying, "Okay, you SOBs, keep your eye on the sky because we got something headed your way that's going to just, you know, bomb the poo out of you people"? Hard to say, but this is a big event. I don't know that ISIS, it is the Islamic State, I don't know that they thought this would be that significant, but they have terrible, terrible political judgment. So,
well, you got to remember that they also just beheaded the Japanese hostage.
I understand that.
I mean, that just happened was this week, last week.
But that's a standard. That's a standard procedure among Muslims. I mean, the world is almost grown up as, the Muslims are beheading more people.
But it was also a woman,
The head's a head, you know what I mean?
But we do know that we have to remember that Jordan is a major U.S. ally in this fight.
It has become a major.
They were a major ally during the invasion of Iraq in 2003. Mm. It's home to hundreds of U.S. military trainers trying to build the defenses at the Syrian and Iraqi borders. So, you know, it is.
But we are also left to wonder.
Makes you
how
wonder.
Many of the Islamic State warriors and leaders have been trained by U.S. military advisors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go in there and train people. We're going to teach you how to fight. Yeah, well, maybe you're going to teach them how to fight, but let's see if you can teach them how to fight only on whatever side happens to be with the United States at any particular time. Can you do that? And the answer is no, they can't. Maybe we shouldn't be teaching people how to fight. You know? Because when you teach people how to fight, guess what? They fight. Is that good for us? Good for the world? Good for Iraq? Good for Iraq? Good for Syria? Good for Jordan? Who's it good for? I don't know. It's, you know, you can't, you, the world is such that you have to learn how to fight. You have to fight on a lot of things, and I know that. I get that. But it doesn't mean you have to train every stumble bum who walks in the door and says he needs some training. There's got to be a little more discretion on this, at least in my opinion. And how do you do it? Easily said, hard to do. The only thing you can say for sure about any of this is that the instability in the Middle East is growing. It's not diminishing. The fighting is only likely to increase. The Middle East is going to become even more obviously unstable, which means the supply of crude oil is going to become less reliable. Almost inevitably, we're going to shut down enough crude oil, or the price is going to go up again, if only because production's been cut by 25%. Maybe that the Saudis don't want to cut production, and OPEC doesn't want to cut production. Maybe production will be cut just the same by people blowing up pipelines and refineries and whatever. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.